from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. It feels good to be back. Last week we had to take a little bit of a hiatus, or some of us had to change up our schedules, if you would, to get that show done. I want to thank DC Taylor, of course, working his magic to get that done. But we're back this week. Bill DeRozier broadcasting from the basement bunker somewhere in Northeast Pennsylvania. Joining me via Skype, Matt Henderson from our Williamsport Bureau. How you doing today, Matt?
Hey, Bill. I'm doing well. Glad to be here. As you mentioned, we've summer plans, I guess, right? We're called summer plans to get in us here. But as you mentioned, I'm in the greater Williamsport area. You know, it's been a wet summer down this way. You know, you keep sending all those cell storms right over my farm. So your corn is going to be it might be a little wet by the time I get it to you. But, you know, it's been good. It's been a little warm summer here and rainy, so lots of good stuff to talk about. Like I said, it's been a couple of weeks, so good to be here. And well, of course,
if we could stay on the corn there, buddy, because I was curious about my corn. The wetness, does that hurt it? Is that what eventually leads to like moldy corn or blighted corn or whatever if it's too wet, or does corn like the water?
Well, corn likes the water, I say in moderation. So I mean, it's great that we have a lot of this moisture right now because the kernels and the ears are forming, you know, so you want enough water and to push it and, you know, to help with fertilization and the whole, that whole part. And it makes it juicier, sweeter, you know, it doesn't hurt it too bad, but too much rain, what it does from, you know, with these heavy thunderstorms we get in the summer, I would say, is we get those, it makes the soil loose. And if you get a wind shear or heavy thunderstorm, it just knocks the crap out of it. And I've had that in the past where a whole field just kind of gets blown down and then you just can't get it fertilized properly or pollinated correctly. So, but where we're at, I think, you know, the sun's been coming out here this past week. I think we'll be okay. And I was looking at the ears the other day and they're getting big and juicy. So, yeah, should be good.
Well,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I definitely am looking forward to it. Also, just out of curiosity, I know your farm is kind of situated on the side of a hill/mountainside. I'm assuming all this wet weather hurts or hinders your ability to move, say, the tractor or the farm equipment around as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Very, very much so. And I've got a couple fields that well, just on that, I mean, you know, you mentioned corn, but we have a whole field of peppers, and that one field just won't dry out. So I can't get in there to try to cultivate it, to loosen the dirt, get some air into it and dry it out. I mean, I walk in it still, you know, I'm sinking into a couple inches of mud. So, it makes it hard to use the equipment because obviously, you know, the tractors weigh just a tad bit more than I do. So they'd be stuck in the field for a couple weeks if I tried to get them up there today yet.
I can only imagine. I do want to give a shout out to DC Taylor, of course. Thank you for keeping us on the air, and hopefully you learned a little bit about corn today, buddy.
How about that? This city boy learned a little bit, so thank you for that. Yes, good morning, guys, and welcome to another program, another weekend here.
And of course, Rusty Fender will be joining us in a little bit. This past week, there was a lot of space activity. Actually, over the last past 2 weeks, right? You had Branson going up with his spaceship, I guess, is the first official tourist in the space. And then Jeff Bezos and Amazon launched their particularly shaped rocket in the space as well. So that was an interesting thing. The thing I got the biggest kick out of was thanking all of the engineers and the employees at Amazon, and then lastly the customers for paying for all of it. And then I get to thinking to myself, like, oh great, I'm so glad we paid for you to go to space, and yet things cost like really expensive sometimes on your website. Imagine if all that was reinvested back into you know, helping defer inflation and or helping low and moderate income families. I can't complain too much. I do believe Amazon is a proactive company when it comes to philanthropy and charitable donations and things like that. So, but I just thought it was funny and I wanted to shed some light on it today. What do you think, Matt?
No, yeah, I agree. Like you said, I was on Amazon earlier thinking, well, what am I paying for? You know, somebody to fly in space, I guess. But, yeah, you know, hey, if we had a couple billion dollars in the bank, who knows where we could be broadcasting from space, you know, a
space bunker.
Yeah. Think about it, you know? So,
who knows?
Good for him, I guess.
Well, this is a show dedicated to the energy industry and fossil fuels. And I'm sure in some way, shape or form, fossil fuels help those two gentlemen get in the space and help Elon Musk's company get in the space regularly as well. So hopefully they remember that. I think Bezos did make a comment about how all carbon emitting energy or industry should be moved to space. And that way the emissions go in the space and not on the planet. Would love to see something like that happen someday. But until that day happens, we still got to make our energy here and we got to consume that energy here. So a couple of stories that came across my desk this week. U.S. natural gas off to the races on strong LNG and Mexico demand and producer discipline. This is according to NGI. U.S. natural gas demand and prices are off to the races, driven by the convergence of supply and demand related factors as the world emerges from COVID-19. Also, I would like to just emphasize we've had some hot summers, and that also leads to more natural gas consumption, whether you realize it or not, as power plants have to burn more natural gas to meet the needs of the consumers. The other thing I don't think people really appreciate besides, and we'll come back to the LNG part in a minute. We talk about LNG all the time. Mexico is one of the largest importers of natural gas from the United States. And you probably wouldn't think that, or at least just wouldn't occur to you, but there are quite a few pipelines that export natural gas from the lower southern plays, if you will, Gulf of Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, that area, down into Mexico. And Mexico is probably dealing with the similar rebound that we have in manufacturing and or use of natural gas as the economies open back up. But they're probably dealing with similar, you know, heat and weather related issues as well, and just simply need the power. I'm not aware of Mexico having any nuclear reactors or anything like that. So I think they have to rely on more traditional energy sources. So I'm just a big proponent of us, the United States, being able to ship our energy anywhere outside of our country, because that typically results in an injection into more money into our economy. And I see it as a positive. Matt, what are your thoughts on Mexico standing out as one of the reasons why natural gas pricing and forecasts for it are recovering quite well?
Yeah, and you know, I think you're right. A lot of people focus on exporting, and we always think it's going via LNG. But you know, we've obviously had a pipeline or, you know, pretty strong infrastructure to Mexico, you know, exporting it. And as you mentioned, with the economy improving, you know, in Mexico, they have access to natural gas, and I would say, you know, cheaper natural gas because of somewhat what's going on here in the Appalachian Basin. You know, as we started producing more of our gas in this area, the pipelines are turned around. We're not importing it here from Gulf Coast or from, you know, Midwest. And now Texas and Gulf Coast looking for areas exported. So, boom, you know, let's ship it via pipeline down to Mexico. And, you know, like you said, that's increasing and growing. It's a good market. And, you know, if you follow the LNG market, you know, it's picking back up again. But a lot of that had been slowed down a little bit due to some maintenance and just, you know, beyond the pandemic, but some ships and you know, getting the facilities kind of back in shape and so forth. But the pipelines, it just keeps on going and keeps getting exported there. And I think it's a growing market. And you know, I know always when we look at, you know, our friends to the north and friends to the south, I think pipeline export, and then even I know in Canada they've looked at, okay, well, let's export the gas via pipeline and then let's, you know, turn into LNG. So, and I think there's a couple of those projects in the works that will, you know, only provide more opportunity.
Actually, you just reminded me of a story, yeah, I read earlier this week, but I didn't set up here. Canada is a unique spot. United States and Canada have always had a, I would say, more of a sharing relationship. There were certain parts of the country where Canadian natural gas would come into the United States, and there's certain parts of the country where U.S. natural gas goes to Canada, just because I think people forget how big Canada is geographically and sometimes where the populations are. So sometimes it just made more sense to bring it across the border than to, say, ship across the country.
Yeah.
But I was reading since the prolific nature of United States oil and natural gas has really dominated the world, including where Canada gets its energy from, the issue has become more and more, how can Canada get their gas to the coasts to export? And I was reading a story about how they've been looking into moving gas from, I forget which region of Canada, essentially to Quebec, so that they could export it, right? It was a $14 billion project between the pipeline, I think they said 700-mile pipeline, and eventually the export terminal, and they just shut down the project. They said that they couldn't justify it from a climate perspective. $14 billion.
Wow.
Think of the amount of work and the effort and the labor. It's mind-blowing that people succumb to this belief that fossil fuels and climate change can't coexist, when in reality we've proven that they can. Pennsylvania in the United States continues to reduce emissions while it has exponentially increased the production of oil and natural gas, and we're shipping it worldwide. The issue is not what we're doing here or in Canada. It's what's going on in third world countries, developing nations, and places like Canada. So if we are Canada, China. But the reality is we need to get more of that energy out to the world, not stifle it. And I want to end with one last thing, Matt, and you can jump in. Yeah. When you build something today, it's built to an incredible standard that just doesn't exist in anything built 50 years ago. And we should embrace that new development.
Yeah, you know, 100% agree, of course. And that's where the frustration is, at least on my end, too, is, you know, everybody's like, well, we need to do this. We need to do this. It's like this technology and this innovation that has occurred here in the U.S. in the Northeast is taken and applied around the world. And, you know, we are, so far advanced on, you know, say natural gas distribution, natural gas extraction, that if we could apply this technology elsewhere and, you know, power generation and everywhere, you know, across the globe, it would make so much, you know, a better difference. I mean, we have, like you mentioned, in the U.S. in the last 15 years, emissions are lower. Across the board, NOx and SOx and greenhouse, you know, all of those, emissions have reduced to the point where, you know, it's a wonder how can you continue to reduce them. But, you know, the pushback needs to be is getting the rest of the world to our standards. But if we want to shut it down here in the U.S., it's not going to improve it, because, you know, we need these energy, and, you know, we're going to continue to use energy. And, you know, to kind of highlight it, you know, when you look at, you know, developing countries, and you look at China, for example, which you mentioned, you know, right now, you know, China is a developing nation, or, you know, they're catching up, I'd say, you know, to the U.S. And when you look at the per capita use of energy in China, they are 1/3 of what we use in the United States. So, and that's going to only continue to increase, you know. So if they double what they use, and, you know, people want more stuff, you know, you have more wealth, you're going to buy more TVs, you're going to use more energy, air conditioning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The energy use is going to grow, and with that, the emissions is going to grow. And it's just, like I said, it just boggles my mind when you try to have these conversations with people where the United States is in terms of energy efficiency and energy, emissions, that, you know, we are doing our part, and we're going to continue to do the part. And the industry, you know, because everyone says, oh, it's this industry. No, it's not. It's, you know, it's Bill DeRozier, who lives in Northeast. It's Matt Henderson, who lives, you know, we are part of this community. And you know, you've got your kids, I got my kids, and, you know, we're doing the best we can to make it better for them. So I'll get off my soapbox here, because I know we have some more interesting and some good economic development stories to talk about here in a few minutes. So.
Well, we certainly do. And in fact, our guest from the second or for the second segment is just about to call in here. So why don't we jump to Fender's Fast Facts? Rusty just arrived during your tirade. Yeah, your tirade there, Matt. Rusty, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. What do you have for us today?
Thanks, Bill. And a big month and a big week for space travel, of course, with the moon landing. And also on the 26th, which is Monday, the first flashes of light ever captured by NASA on the planet Jupiter from the Hubble telescope, DC.
Okay.
Pretty interesting.
All right.
Of course, that's been monitoring for about 30 years, so I guess it's kind of big news.
Yeah.
A couple of fast facts about Jupiter, DC. Jupiter has more moons than any other planet in the solar system. 79 moons rotate around the planet Jupiter. The gas planet consists of about 90% hydrogen and 10% helium, with a mixture of other gases such as methane.
Okay.
Jupiter is 1,300 times larger than the Earth in volume. It's 11 times larger in diameter and 317 times larger in mass.
Okay.
Our entire planet could be hidden in one solar storm on Jupiter.
Oh, yeah. The big black spot you see moving.
Precisely.
Around. Yeah.
Exactly. This is interesting, DC. The day on Jupiter is shorter than ours. A typical day on Jupiter lasts 10 hours and 15 minutes, Earth time.
Okay.
But the year is longer. 1 year is 11.8 of Earth's standard years. So okay. 1 year equals 12 years.
All right.
Pretty interesting. All right. There is no boundary between the atmosphere and the ocean of liquefied gas in the lower layers of Jupiter because of the tremendous pressure. As you descend into the planet, the surrounding gas gradually thickens and eventually becomes a liquid. So yeah. You would be swallowed up by liquid.
Okay.
That's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
And DC, could you effectively land a spacecraft on Jupiter?
Well, I mean, you just, with the thing you just said about the liquid and all that, to land it, but it would be like underwater or something, under liquid. So I'm going with yes.
that was a trick question, but the answer is no, but not because of the reason that I said.
Uh-huh.
You could effectively land. You could try to land a spacecraft on Jupiter. However, the radiation belts that surround the planet are 300,000 times greater than that of Earth's. So theoretically, within 1 million miles of Jupiter, all electronic communication and electronic devices would be rendered useless.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
Wow.
So until they find another way to control, machines and planetary crafts like that.
Uh-huh.
So it's a very complicated answer, but not for the reason that you thought. It's because it just wipes every single thing clean. Uh-huh. So if you're going to Jupiter, don't take your MasterCard and Visa cards because it'll be wiped clean in a minute.
Yeah, take your wallet out, leave it
yeah,
at home.
Yeah, they take cash up there. And those are the fast facts about Jupiter this week, DC.
Okay, erase your phone too, I guess.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you, Rusty. This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. And I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything. just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt, you could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that that helps out too, because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Welcome back to the Shell Gas News. It's my pleasure to host a good friend of the program from the other side of the state, State Representative Josh Kale, serving Pennsylvania's 15th legislative district. I always like to say it's the mighty Shell Cracker District, because the Shell Cracker plant sits in your district there. But Josh, for the benefit of our listeners on this side of the state, remind us geographically where the 15th legislative district is.
Sure thing, Bill, and thank you as always for having me on the show. The 15th district, it borders West Virginia and almost Ohio on the western side of the state. It's in the southwest corner of the state. So if you see where Pittsburgh is, it's in between Pittsburgh and West Virginia. That most of that area is the 15th district.
And thank you for explaining that. And before we dive into matters related to the energy industry, I do want to get your thoughts on how the Pennsylvania 2021 budget season wrapped up. It was an interesting year. Normally we're fighting because we don't have enough money. And this year you guys had more than enough money, and you were fighting over how to spend it this year, next year. So if you could take a few minutes, just tell us what your thoughts were on the budget and if you were able to accomplish what you wanted to do for your district.
Yeah, so the budget I thought this year was a responsible budget. I don't think you're ever going to have everybody happy completely with the budget that passes, but you know what? There was no new taxes, no tax increases, no new fees, nothing like that. And at the same time, we saved $5 or $6 billion, put it away for years into the future. There's a lot of money and resources from the federal government. A lot of people wanted to just spend it, increase budget items, or do capital projects or whatever you can do with the money in the budget. But we decided that, you know what, we're gonna save this. We're not sure what this is gonna hold. So let's stash it away when there might be a time when we need it more than we do right now, which I thought was the wise thing to do, considering how, you know, with the different ups and downs in the economy, whether there's, you know, going to be a recession in the near future or not, we have those resources so that we're not going to be scrambling when something does happen. Me personally, I also accomplished a lot of stuff with workforce development line item. I was happy that we really focused on that, and we're focusing on jobs that are grounded in reality, jobs in the trades, and we put some resources towards it. So I was pleased to see that. Overall, good budget. There was obviously some things in there that, you know, we could have done more or less of, but, you know, I'm one of 203, and I'm pleased with how the budget ended up happening.
Well, we appreciate your commentary on that, and that seems to be kind of general consistency with everybody we've spoken to on the program about the budget this year. Well, some exciting news out your way that doesn't necessarily involve Shell, and we'll get to Shell in a minute, is, of course, the Pittsburgh Airport. It's a beautiful airport. It's uniquely positioned on top of the energy industry. It's kind of the crossroads of energy, economic development, and travel. They recently announced the completion of the microgrid that was built out there. I guess it's the first true microgrid in Pennsylvania. The airport now is fully self-sustainable from an energy standpoint. I think mixing both a natural gas cogen operation with some solar and wind on the field. Of course, the natural gas is coming right below the runways, if you will, as it's being developed by a producer out there. What are your thoughts? I know you don't represent the district or the airport specifically, but you border it. What are your thoughts on this?
First of all, it's completely fascinating. I mean, it's really interesting what they're doing. So basically, they just drilled right below them and pulled the natural gas out of the ground, and now that's what they're running their electricity on. It's a great, efficient idea. They're using some wind and solar as well, but mainly it's the natural gas that's pushing it. And it's not just the airport either, Bill. They are actually going to be having basically a business park right there on the airport's grounds. And there's going to be some, manufacturing there, some other light industrial stuff going on there. So it's a really exciting project that's happening. The airport's about to undergo $1.2 billion improvement and redevelopment, basically, of the area. And we're excited about the economic activity that's going to come from that, not just from planes flying in and out, but from the business park they're calling Neighborhood 91 that is going to be there. And it could be something that we see into the future if we're able to continue to explore and extract natural gas like we can now. Because out in Western Pennsylvania, just about anywhere you go, if you drill down, there's going to be natural gas right there. So the opportunities are endless for what we could do with changing and making our energy systems more efficient. And I think the airport led the way and showed one of the unique ways that you can use our resources, our natural gas here, to power our airport and our business park. So it's pretty cool stuff.
Well, I appreciate your insights. And of course, we look forward to diving deeper into what's going on out there. Next week's guest on the program will be Chris Heck, who's the president of the airport chamber. And he's pretty excited to dive deeper into what you had mentioned, into all the different facets of what this microgrid means, from economic development to manufacturing to travel to the region as a whole. But let's dive deeper into a topic that I know Matt Henderson and I were super excited to have you on this program about: the Shell cracker plant. It's almost completed, over $7 billion. It's probably closer to $8 billion. Of course, it's a tremendous asset to the Commonwealth, to North America. And most recently, I think last week, the Robert Morris University produced a study. I understand Shell paid for it, but they had nothing to do with the study, which looked at the economic impact each year the Shell cracker plant will have on Pennsylvania's economy, and they estimate it close to $4 billion. I know you are familiar with the study. I know you're familiar firsthand with what's going on out there. Take us through what this kind of means, or what this means for Pennsylvania and your district.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually had the opportunity to meet with the professor that did the study yesterday, and we really went through it. And it is fascinating. What's the most fascinating, encouraging part about all of it is what he communicated to us is his figures are conservative. These are figures that aren't taking into account certain things that could spin off and this, that, and the other that we could see with the energy industry coming in after the plant opens up. But he said that in just the region around the cracker plant, we're going to see about $2.7 billion of economic activity per year. And then also in beyond that, in Pennsylvania, $1.7 billion. So that's where that figure comes from. And the total of that. And that's not Ohio or West Virginia. That's just in Pennsylvania. And we're talking about the ancillary businesses like restaurants that could, you know, see increased people coming because of what's happening there. We're also talking about the 600 or 700 people that are working there directly. So it was a very broad study as far as the impact can go. And it was a thorough study as well. And there's something like 400 different subsets of variables that went into it. And this stuff is now getting the stuff that's over my head. I'm, you know, certainly no statistician or professor in economics, but it was thorough, impressive. And let me tell you, at the end of the day, what I really took away from it is that this petrochemical facility that we have in our backyard, just because there's not going to be 8,000 or 8,500 people working there around the clock anymore, doesn't mean it's not going to be a massive economic benefit for our region.
Yeah, Josh, it's, you know, people are going to argue the numbers, right? I mean, we know that, but you know, when you have a B after this, you know, you can cut that in half and it's still pretty impressive, you know, just what is to come. And, you know, a lot of the work, or some of the work I do, is tied to the Shell facility, because I'm working some manufacturers in your region, in that region, who are, I tell you, there's a lot of excitement, you know, just kind of a little history on that. I mean, from the construction side of things, you know, Bill mentioned, it's, you know, what, $7-8 billion in construction. And, you know, as long as we get a piece of that, which we have got a piece of that in terms of the construction side, but then the operation maintenance side. You know, there's so many companies out there who are contracting with them. You know, this is a a world-class facility that's going to have hundreds of millions of dollars, in terms of maintenance and upkeep, and not just the jobs. But, you know, from the plastics downstream, you know, we're working with companies who are, you know, just excited because, you know, it's closer. They can get these pellets closer. They can get, you know, they're looking to expand their businesses, you know, threefold, hiring new people, as you mentioned. I mean, it's always great, you know, when we talked about this in, you know, 10 years ago or, you know, however long this process has been going on. But now you're starting to see, you know, local manufacturers, local companies who have engaged with Shell and are going to benefit from, just having this resource in the backyard. And I just think it's phenomenal to see it coming to fruition. You know, they haven't turned the switch on yet, but, early next year, mid next year, we're going to start seeing these companies, local companies who are going to start benefiting from it. So, I'm sure you're working with local companies out there and, you know, people are reaching out for you. And I'd be interested to see, what segment are you seeing many plastics processors, you know, jumping up and getting involved from your district?
Well, and let me say this first, because you mentioned it, that they're not going to turn the lights on until next year, 9 months, whatever it is that they're planning on starting. They're actually slowly turning it on right now. They have to, you know, start certain things first. And you guys have seen it, but if you haven't seen it, this facility, it's like a city. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. But yes, we have heard from plastic manufacturers that are looking to build somewhere up and down the river. So one of the new things that I've been hearing a lot about, and I really don't understand it quite that well, but a lot of people are very excited about the technology in this area, is carbon capture and also hydrogen, blue hydrogen. And I just had a conversation with Shell yesterday, and they were talking about the opportunity that could come from that in this region with that plant there and with the opportunity surrounding it as well. So there's plastic. I've heard a lot about rubber. People have been talking about. And then, of course, the carbon capture and the blue hydrogen. Let me just take a step back and just so we can understand better the magnitude of what's happening here. And it's not just obviously the petrochemical facility that we have. That's one of the major facilities. But the Department of Energy did a study, I believe it was a year or two ago, and it showed that in the Appalachia area, which is, you know, eastern Ohio, northern West Virginia, and western Pennsylvania, just in this area alone, because of the natural gas industry, we could see upwards of 200,000 full-time manufacturing jobs, not jobs in construction, in manufacturing. So all the other construction and maintenance jobs that go along with that is just added bonus. And that was based off of the ability to extract the amount of natural gas that we have here and the other variables that go into it as well. And we're starting to see the beginning of that come into fruition. And that's what's so exciting about this petrochemical plant, is that it could lead to multiple other types of manufacturing opportunities in the area. And hopefully we see it across the state. I think that's really a critical aspect of this. And I think it's critical for the energy industry to have different spots across the state and really make Pennsylvania a hub, not just for energy, which we already are, but also for manufacturing, so that we can make things. So we take it out of the ground, we make it, and we can sell it and buy it all right here in Pennsylvania, being vertically integrated.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, they're coming online. You know, there's three 90-megawatt power plants, like you said, they commissioned. And it is great to see. It is its own city, you know, wastewater treatment. I mean, it's just phenomenal to see what's going on out there. And one thing I do want to touch on is, I'll share more information with you, but this one project I had the pleasure to work on, it's called Shell Power. And it's really engaging manufacturers with, you know, Shell Energy and obviously the petrochemical component is just, you know, especially in your district, is a huge opportunity. And, you know, from working with Shell, I have to say, you know, this, as we know, I mean, they're not a small mom and pop company, but, you know, the partnership that we've had working with them has been phenomenal. You know, they provided us information and resources and provided us, you know, experts to talk to the manufacturers. And the end of the summer, we're doing a tour, you know, a perimeter tour with them, meeting with, you know, another group of manufacturers. You know, I just have found it very, you know, I say refreshing to see these, the outreach in the community that Shell has done, you know, just, you know, writing checks and donating to the colleges and in the community parks. And it is great, of course, but they also give us access and to their experts and explain the, you know, what's going on and explain to this manufacturer, well, you know, you may or may not be a good partner because of this, or you could be a partner. So I'd be interested to hear what you have seen, you know, in your role and, you know, from a community partnership and outreach from the Shell officials.
Yeah, their transparency has been remarkable. It's not just with me, but it's with other people within the industry, like you had mentioned. Their engagement with the community has been above and beyond. It's been really incredible how much resources they've put into, like you mentioned, the community college and others. But the community college, it was more than just writing them a check. What they did was they started a program so that we in Western Pennsylvania in the 15th district could send a place to train our kids to work at the Shell plant, which I thought was pretty cool. So it gave us the ability to actually have people, local homegrown people, working at the facility in different types of roles. So that was another way that they helped out. Just the overall effort that they've put into being completely transparent with the public at large, whether it's an environmental group, industry group, chamber of commerce, has been very impressive. I know that people have called my office asking questions about one thing or another. Sometimes it's an environmental question. Sometimes it's a question about different, you know, who they use for this, that, or the other. And I'll reach out to their government affairs people, and within hours, usually, they're connected with that person, and they just, you know, they bring them in, and they tell them exactly, you know, what's going on. And it's not always the answer the person wants to hear, but everybody appreciates that they actually take the time on a very granular level to really engage with the community. And it's been an impressive feat. And I think that goes towards the sound people that they have working within their government affairs department and their community engagement department, because they really do put an effort in, and they do care where people are at and what people are concerned about. And they want to make sure that the truth is out there and the facts are being shared on what's actually happening.
Well, Josh, I really want to thank you for joining us on the program. And I know there are so many more layers to this onion, if you will. Yeah. So we'll have to have you on again real soon to continue discussing just the impacts. I know there's a lot of people who are anxious to finally see the cracker plant turn on. I know you've advised us that it's going to be a slow turning on. You know, it's a very big investment. It's a very big project. A lot has to go into that. But I know once that's up and running, that'll be a tremendous impact. And it'll be great to see that economic boom that we discussed from the study actually start to impact the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and help create those jobs. And I've heard rumblings of numerous companies that are looking to move up here. And I know everyone's basically just kind of timed that with when the plant and the project actually start up. So with that being said, thank you again for your leadership. Thank you again for your time. We'll have you on again real soon. How can people get in touch with you if they're interested in learning more about your work and your area?
Yeah, the best way to get in touch with me really is on Facebook. It's my official Facebook page, Joshua Kale, PA State Rep Josh Kale, or online, the website there. But the easiest way to get there is through the Facebook page as well. And we have a number for the office, 724-728-7655 as well. But, hey, I thank you guys for having me. Anytime you want me to come on, I'd be happy to. It's always good talking to you guys. You're always talking about things that matter and relevant things for our future here in Western Pennsylvania and across the entire state where you are, northeastern Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you again, Josh Kale, representing Pennsylvania's 15th Legislative District. We're going to take a quick break on the Shell Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Do you know the power of America's energy security? Security that starts right here? The Marcellus Shale alone contains enough energy to meet our demand for the next 100 years. And that's just by today's estimates. If Pennsylvania were a country, it would be the fifth largest producer of natural gas in the world. All thanks to the incredible natural gas production right here in northeastern Pennsylvania. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000, Montrose, 278-7368.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News, and I want to give a shout-out to our friend on the other side of the state, Josh Kale, for joining us on the program. We really do appreciate his updates on all things Western Pennsylvania, including Shell, and his thoughts on the airport microgrid that's been built out. Matt, while we have a couple of minutes here, you and I were talking off air about the technology showcase that's coming up, I believe, as part of Shell Insight. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and I think it ties in great with the conversation, you know, about the Shell facility and downstream innovation technology. And, you know, through this, you know, one project I'm on called Shell Power, we're working with the Marcellus Shell Coalition and, you know, all of our good friends over there. And the one area is called, the technology showcase. And what the showcase is about is, you know, new innovative ideas to, you know, be applied in the energy industry. And, you know, over the years, I mean, I think this is a 10th year they've had projects, you know, working on, you know, finding that, say, holy grail of, you know, water, produced water treatment, but focused on air emissions, looking at projects, heat capture, you know. You know, I've seen some innovative and some interesting ideas around, like, compressor stations and capturing that heat that's out there. So the tech showcase, you know, is a great avenue for companies, you know, who have a innovative product or, you know, some new technology that's beyond just the classroom phase or the back of the napkin, but it's, you know, looking for, say, some field research. And what the technology showcase does twice a year is, you know, brings together people who they can apply to have the opportunity to then present in front of, you know, the industry professionals out there, you know, such as yourself, such as, you know, I know EQT and Range and all the, you know, the ups to the drillers and stuff like that are interested in it. And, you know, so what a company can do is go to, and probably the best is to, you know, Google it or go to shellpower.org, but Google Technology Showcase, Shell Insight. You go on there and it's a quick application process. You know, it's, you know, you the basics, and there's about I say it's quick and easy, but there's about a 200-word value proposition that you have to submit. And, you know, then a little bit more about your product or your technology, where you submit it to the Shell Insight group. And what they do is they're going to score and review from, you know, all the applications they get. Then they will have about 6 or 7, I believe, people who make it to the next round. And then that next round, you know, is, to me, is, you know, if you made it there, you're a winner, because now you're presenting to a group of 50, 60 professionals talking about your technology, what it can do for the industry, how it can improve in efficiency, or as we all know, environmental and emission controls or emission capture, whether it's leak detection, whether it's a better valves on site that are not that are releasing less methane into the atmosphere. But you can present your technology to these 30, 40, 50 people and get feedback directly from the industry and say, well, have you tried this, or what about some of the hurdles of applying your technology out into the field. So again, kind of going back, the August 6th is the deadline to submit for consideration. As I mentioned, it's an online portal through Shale Insights website. You go and get in front of the research collaborative, and then they pick those six or seven people to the next round, and then the next round is I believe it's back up in September sometime. Yeah, September, was it 28th to the 30th in Erie, PA. So I don't know if you're going, Bill, but we're going to the other side of the state for Shale Insight this year, up in the Bayfront Waterfront. Was it Bayfront? Erie, Bill?
I've not been up there. It'll be interesting. I've never been to Erie at all.
I think you need a passport to get there. but then, you go up there, and the end of September, I think it's the 28th through the 30th, you present. So again, through my project, Shale Power, you can go to that website, my contact info. Be glad to help people. Worked with several people who have submitted some of their technology. You and I both know that, every downturn in the industry has come, people have come out of the woodwork with these new innovative ideas, because, despite what everybody says, natural gas is still pretty cheap. It's pretty amazing that companies can make a profit in this market that we're in. But these new ideas out there are ways that companies can become more efficient. And to me, it's just a great way to showcase, a mom and pop shop has come up with some great ideas in the past and can apply it out there. So I'm excited. I always like to see new ideas kind of get, put through the ringer, I guess, and people can provide their feedback, help them kind of move to the next phase. And if they're lucky, either, they win by getting maybe a field test and, applying that technology out there. So, again, I appreciate the plug. Take a moment, do your Google search, find out about the technology showcase at Shale Insight 2021, and hopefully people can submit some information there.
Sounds good. And I do recall that I'd have to do some research. You mentioned Erie up there in Lake Erie. Yeah. Many people don't realize there actually is a offshore, I think it's predominantly natural gas play in Lake Erie, though it's only amounted to, I think, like 1% of all of Canada's natural gas production. But over the, over the history of modern oil and gas development, Lake Erie essentially has been a targeted area of oil and natural gas. I think the oil, if I remember, the oil is more on the United States side and the gas is on the Canadian side. But anyways, it's just one of those things people think or don't realize that, again, fossil fuel development has, touched so many places around the world in our lives. And, has helped us get to where we are today. So I think it's a great idea to showcase technology, the innovations of the energy industry, and change it up locations, as you just mentioned. So with that being said, why don't we take a quick break? Coming up next segment, of course, is the Marcellus Drilling News Top 5 and the always popular job segment brought to you by Lackawanna College and the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. So with that being said, stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit Lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's continuing education department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. And I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a couple minutes, exploring your careers, potential careers, your jobs in the gas and energy industries. It's the job segment brought to you by Lackawanna College. Coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, time for the top five stories of the past 7 days. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So the top five most read stories on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past 7 days. Here you go. Coming in at number five last week, EQT launches a $75 million fund to investigate hydrogen and CO2 storage. Last week, MDN told you that EQT Corporation, the largest natural gas driller in the U.S., had released its 2020 ESG report and announced the company would be net carbon zero by 2025 or sooner. In a follow-up conference call with analysts, EQT CEO Toby Rice announced he believes EQT could become the lowest cost producer of hydrogen in the United States, using EQT's fracked natural gas, of course. In addition, when shale wells run dry, Rice plans to pump carbon dioxide down into the empty wells, something called carbon sequestration. EQT has created a $75 million fund to research and investigate how to promote natural gas, the company's primary product, and at the same time reduce the company's so-called carbon footprint. We'll interject the same point we've made a number of times before on MarcellusDrilling.com. Even if companies like EQT get to mythical carbon net zero, an impossibility in our humble opinion, the product they extract from the ground, methane, gets burned and turns into carbon dioxide. Does anyone else see a contradiction here? All right.
Number four, DC. National Grid sounds the alarm. New York City needs more natural gas or else. Now, yesterday, National Grid issued its natural gas long-term capacity second supplemental report. The report reaffirms the company's commitment to achieving a mythical so-called net zero carbon future, as DC just mentioned. Yeah. Whatever, the report provides an update on the short and long-term energy needs of downstate New York customers, reviews the status of targeted solutions identified by the company in 2020, and emphasizes the importance of ensuring that no customer is left behind during the transition to a magical net zero future. Well, how will they accomplish this? Well, according to the updated report, with more natural gas, the company says without allowing an LNG vaporizer at its Greenpoint, Brooklyn facility, once again, new customers for Nat Gas will either be blocked from receiving service or there will be outages around New York City beginning in the winter of 2023-2024, DC.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah, really, especially with the big city.
Yeah, the third most popular story over the past week on MarcellusDrilling.com, Cabot and Cimarex merger explained. Love the one you're with. More details have emerged from what has to be one of the oddest combinations in recent memory. The merger of Permian driller Cimarex Energy with Marcellus driller Cabot Oil and Gas. As we told you in a follow-up to the big news, many stock analysts and investors are baffled by the combo. Due to recent Securities and Exchange Commission filings, we now have more insight into what led to the odd combination. Cabot considered a three-way merger last year, and Cimarex held talks and considered five different potential merger partners before settling on Cabot. We spotted two different stories, one about Cabot and one about Cimarex, which kind of explains their merger. We still maintain Cimarex is buying out Cabot. Both companies really, really, really wanted to merge with another company. Last year, they both evaluated a number of opportunities. It looks to us like what happened is that at the end of the day, when the smoke cleared, these two were the only ones left standing in the room, so they decided to dance. All right.
Boy, the merger is a big business, DC.
Wow. Yeah.
Number two, minor pipeline leak at the Cambridge, Ohio injection well. Now, on June 24th, the operator of the SOS D2 injection well in Cambridge, Ohio, that's Guernsey County, reported a small release from a pipeline that transfers fluid from a storage tank to the injection well. The well's owner-operator, Silcor Oilfield Services Incorporated, contained the leak. The Ohio Department of Natural Resources was alerted and is overseeing remediation and of the affected area and repair of the line. Now, end of story, except that the city of Cambridge, population 10,635, was not informed of the leak. The city didn't find out until an unrelated matter, potential illegal dumping going on near the injection well, caused the city to talk with ODNR, and only at that point did ODNR inform the city of what happened with spill at the injection well site. Well, city officials called the lack of communication by ODNR and the Ohio EPA a little disheartening. We don't know how much brine spilled onto the ground from the leak, so it's hard to characterize whether or not this was or is a big deal. So likely not a big deal, given the ODNR didn't think it important enough to even mention it to Cambridge. However, good communication is never a mistake. Seems like someone at ODNR should have thought to inform the locals of what happened, even if it is minor, DC.
Okay, here's the number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Unplanned outage at two West Virginia MarkWest plants knocks 2.4 billion cubic feet per day offline. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's disconcerting. We're talking about an operational event, in other words, an outage at not one, but two MarkWest Energy natural gas processing plants, both in West Virginia. MarkWest's Sherwood plant in Doddridge County and Mobley plant in Wetzel County are affected. According to NGI's daily gas price index, four pipeline receipt locations affected by the outage are scheduled to go to zero beginning, this was a couple weeks ago, until further notice. Flows to at least four pipeline systems are directly affected. Columbia Gas Transmission, TCO, Equitrans, EQM, Rockies Express, REX, and Rover. It may affect up to 2.4 billion cubic feet per day along those pipelines. Several other pipelines may also be affected. In a brief postscript as of earlier, a couple weeks ago, the problem, which was a leak in an NGL pipeline, had been fixed, and both plants are now back to full capacity. And those are your top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at marcellusdrilling.com/email. And now time for the jobs segment, exploring your careers in the gas and energy industries. It's brought to you by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
DC Taylor, thank you. And in Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania state job, looking for an oil, gas, and carbon storage geoscience supervisor. It's based in Allegheny County in the Pittsburgh area. Danos, looking for a lease operator out of Wellsboro. Henkels and McCoy, the line folks, looking for a gas utility laborer out of Bluebell, down in the Lancaster area. ROC Services Company, an experienced roustabout and general labor. Multiple positions available now. It's out of Washington, Pennsylvania. It's also out in the Pittsburgh area. Equitrans Midstream, looking for an environmental coordinator out of Canonsburg. The Montrose Environmental Group, an environmental technician opening out of Bridgeville. Aerotech, looking for a water transfer technician based in Canonsburg. And Gas Field Specialist, opening for a shop supervisor for the oil and gas division. That's headquartered in Shingle House. Now in Ohio, Tetra Tech, looking for a traveling LNG pipeline laborer, headquartered in St. Clairsville. Gulfport Energy, looking for an operator out of St. Clairsville. Utility Resource Group, a locating technician based in Jackson. Duke Energy, a gas marketing specialist headquartered in Cincinnati. Energy Harbor LLC, a natural gas structuring and pricing analyst headquartered in Akron. Got an opening for a natural gas utility project manager for Wolpert Incorporated, based in Perrysburg. And Utility Technologies International, a natural gas operator and a qualification evaluator headquartered in Cincinnati. Moving to West Virginia, Mountaineer Gas, an opening for a human resources representative for their corporate office based in Charleston. DTE Energy, an instrument and control engineer for West Virginia and eventually, after COVID, for the entire United States. Temporarily remote at this moment. USA Compression, looking for a field service technician on a Wellsburg. TC Energy, an opening for an applications developer in their IT department. That's out of Charleston. CJ Hughes Construction Incorporated, looking for laborers and flaggers. 10 positions based in Huntington. EQT Corporation, an opening for a construction specialist level 1 and 2. It's out of Clarksburg. And Diversified Gas and Oil, a vice president of gathering and transmission pipeline operations, headquartered in Charleston. Check out New York State's Storti Quality. Looking for a project manager for the natural gas inspection team for the entire Empire State of New York. New York State Electric and Gas and Energy Specialist opening based in Binghamton. Empire Energy, looking for well tenders. That's multiple positions available now out of Chautauqua County. Wellworks Energy, looking for a flowback operator for the entire United States. It's a traveling position, temporarily remote. NGL Energy Partners, a terminal operator for the oil and gas division out of Albany, and Area Energy. Openings for general laborers, 8 positions available out of Seneca Falls. That's up in the Albany area, state capital region. And those are the jobs that DC mentioned this week, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Thank you so much for listening to the Shale Gas News here on our network of stations every week, Gem 104 and their roster of stations, and of course online all the time at talkwilliamsport.com. And for Bill DeRosia, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks once again for listening to the Shale Gas News.